Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 865. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about castles and standing stones, Roman baths and Vikings, steam trains, and a magical mystery tour as we tour Great Britain by rail. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about the United Kingdom. I'd like to welcome to the show Tracy Collins from UKTravelPlanning.com, the UK Travel Planning Podcast, and three other websites that we'll talk about later. But we've brought on Tracy to talk about a portion of the UK, and particularly we're going to talk about exploring Great Britain by rail. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for inviting me to talk about my best of Great Britain by rail travel itinerary.
And Tracy and I have known each other for less than a year, although it feels like forever. So it's great that we finally got you on the show. And why should someone consider exploring Great Britain by rail?
It's a fantastic way to travel around Great Britain. The rail system in the UK is pretty good. It means that you can avoid driving if that's something that concerns you and you're a little bit worried about driving in a country that you're not used to or on a different side of the road to what you're used to.
Different side of the road, yep, I get
absolutely.
That.
Yeah, and so it's a great way to get from basically from city to city, though in the itinerary I have included one national park. So you can get into the centre of the cities without having to worry about parking. You don't have to look for accommodation that has parking. You don't have to have any worries about that trying to get parked or just driving or getting stressed out because somebody is struggling with navigating or whatever. So it's a really good way. It's also a really good way to travel in terms of for the environment because you travel on a train. You get to see the countryside as you travel. You get to meet other people as well on the train as you travel. So it's a great way to meet British people as you're traveling around. So it's our favourite way to travel around Britain. And we travel by train all the time when we're back. It's our favourite way. And my husband actually worked on the railways for 25 years. So he's travelled on every train line in Britain, a Great Britain, since you were 16, so probably about 40 years now.
Excellent. And you say when you get back, we might as well address that now. You don't live in the UK anymore, but the accent we're hearing is from there originally.
That's correct. So, yeah, I actually live with my husband in Australia now. I'm actually an Australian citizen, so I'm actually British and Australian. I was born in the UK, so I was actually born in Northumberland. 50-something years ago, I won't tell you the exact date. And then actually when I was 13, we emigrated to Southern Africa. So over my lifetime, I've actually lived so far in 7 different countries on 4 continents. So I take slow travel quite seriously. Obviously, since we started the UK Travel Planning website, we've traveled consistently back to the UK to travel around, write content, take videos, do all that sort of stuff. And obviously, we go back. We've got family. My mum still lives there. I've got my brother and sister are there. So it's always lovely to go back and visit friends. So yes, we go back at least for 3 months every year.
Excellent. And what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend?
So I'm going to recommend a 14-day Best of Great Britain by rail itinerary.
So we expanded our week-long itinerary in Tracy's case here. We only do this for close friends into 14 days. Where are we going to start?
So we're going to start in London. So when I devised this itinerary, because I've written quite a few rail itineraries, I knew that I wanted to do an itinerary that would encapsulate in 14 days the best of 3 countries. So we've got England, Wales, and Scotland in the itinerary. Mm-hmm. But I started in London because I know most people, when they fly into the UK, will fly into Heathrow or Gatwick. And I know London is on everybody's itinerary. Everybody that arrives in the UK wants to spend some time in London. It's very unusual that I hear anybody say that they do not want to visit London. So the first 3 days of the itinerary actually are based in London. So you fly in on day one and spend those first 3 days in London. Now, obviously, I could spend this entire podcast talking about London.
And you could do a whole show on London, yes.
Absolutely. So those 3 days, obviously, you've got flexibility to do whatever it is that you're interested in London. You could literally fill an itinerary for weeks and weeks for London. We just recommend on the first day that you think about something like the hop-on, hop-off bus, or maybe do a ride down the Thames in one of the boats, even an Uber boat. Just get yourself orientated with the city. I think that's always a great thing to do on your first day, especially if you've not been. And then the second day, I talk about going to the top sites, so Tower of London, Tower Bridge, walking across there, and going to maybe Borough Market for lunch, depending on the day of the week, down across St. Paul's. There's so much you can do on that second day.
Right.
I always think of like the main highlights of London that everybody wants to see. Because on the first day on the hop-on, hop-off bus, you'll have seen things like, you've seen Big Ben, you'll have seen Buckingham Palace. Mm-hmm. You'll have actually seen those sites. But day two and three gives you a bit more chance to immerse yourself in London. So that would be day two, I would say, do those main things that you want to do if it's Westminster Abbey or the Tower of London. And then day three, I always recommend to people who go to London is to look at some of the museums, because some of the museums in London are fantastic. I, in particular, love the V&A, the Victoria and Albert Museum. Okay. That's my favourite. I could spend days in there, and I have. But there's obviously, you've got the Natural History Museum, they've got the British Museum. So there's plenty of things to do. I guess those first 3 days in London are really fluid and up to whatever it is that you particularly want to do in London.
That's good. And we do have, I think, 4 different episodes on London. So if you want to plan those days, just take a look at those episodes. And I suspect in the UK Travel Planning Podcast, you have a few yourself.
We do. Yes, we've got quite a bit of information about London, tips and itineraries. And obviously, we've got a LondonTravelPlanning.com website as well. So we do have information on London there.
Moving on from London then.
So day four, we suggest that you depart from Paddington Station and go towards Bath. So it will take you about an hour and 20 minutes on the train to get to the beautiful city of Bath. So Bath is a UNESCO World Heritage City. Mm-hmm. It was declared in 1987. It's the only UNESCO World Heritage City in the UK. Definitely worth a visit. There's so much to see and do in Bath. So for this itinerary, basically day four would be your travel to Bath. So say it only takes an hour and 20 minutes. So you're going to get there in the morning. So you've got the rest of that day to explore Bath. And then day five, I've also given a day to Bath. So I know what you're going to ask me, what to do in Bath.
No, before I ask you that, actually, you just brought up something interesting that people should know, which is that the train system, one of the unique things about the train system in England is that you do have to know where you're going to know which station to depart from. Because there isn't, like in a lot of cities in Europe, the Hauptbahnhof or something, the main train station that everything connects. But in fact, it's all disconnected. And so you had to decide where you were going. If you had decided you were heading north first, we would have been at a different train station. And if we were heading south, we would have been at a different train station. So something that we won't get into in much more detail, but you have to make that decision before you can decide where you catch the train.
That's correct, because as you say, there's 9 main train stations in London. They serve various parts of the country. So as you say, if you go north, you go to King's Cross, you go to Euston. My husband knows far more about this than I do, but obviously if you're going west, Paddington train station. So yes, that's who Paddington Bear was named after, the very famous Paddington Bear. So Paddington Station. So you'll get yourself to Paddington Station and then head to Bath Spa. So I said that takes about an hour and 20 minutes and you will have one change in Bristol and then get to Bath. Obviously, again, the Bath Spa train station is in the centre of Bath. So it's only a few minutes walk to lots of fantastic accommodation options and the main tourist sites as well in Bath. Things to do in Bath. You could easily fill a day and a half. I actually took my mum in July for her 80th birthday. That was the city that she chose to visit. And we easily filled a couple of days there. But absolutely the place that you need to visit if you go to Bath are the Roman baths. They were built 70 AD, obviously, the Romans invaded England, and they built Hadrian's Wall, which is obviously in Northumberland, where I'm from. I know you've got a podcast about Hadrian's Wall as well. So in Bath, they built the largest Roman baths in Britain. Though you can't see very much at normal street level, once you get into the baths, you go downstairs and you've got the actual pool there. You've got the museum is fantastic. Absolutely mm-hmm. fantastic. So it was the temple to the god Sulis Minerva. And actually, when the Romans built their town, Bath, it was called Aqua Sulis. So you actually can see, which I think is amazing, there's a bronze head of a statue of Sulis Minerva in the museum, which I just find an absolute privilege that we can see 2,000 years ago something like that. I love it. So I used to be a history teacher, I will say, Chris, at one point, and that connection.
My kids think when I retire, I'm going to go teach high school history someplace. So you're preaching to the choir here.
Okay. So I just love it. And you can see there in the museum, the amount of coins that were actually thrown into the spa where the water came out at spring. And you can actually see that as well. You can actually taste the water as well. You can actually drink a bit of the water.
Although you can't get in the Roman baths.
You cannot go in the water. I would give yourself an hour and a half to 2 hours really to explore the Roman baths. And I would book ahead because they are particularly busy, especially in the summer and at weekends, because a lot of Brits will go and visit the Roman baths. They're part of our heritage and history, and there's a lot of interest, and a lot of, obviously, school groups will go. But yeah, absolutely, that's the first place to go. After you've been to have a walk around the Roman baths, another great place to go, which is just outside, is actually to go to Bath Abbey, which is the Abbey Church of St. Peter and St. Paul, which was built in the 7th century. If you're energetic, you can climb to the tower, at the top of the tower in the Abbey, which I haven't done. I will put my hand up and say. But fantastic straight stained glass windows to admire. It's a beautiful abbey. Very popular. I know even, I think we didn't have tickets when we went in July for that. Actually, we just queued up. I think it's a donation of about £5 to get into Bath Abbey. My mum was very keen, so we did go in there and have a look around. And then another place to go and visit in Bath is to go and have a look at the Royal Crescent. Because obviously, Bath's very famous for two things. It's the Romans and Georgians. So you've got a huge amount of Georgian architecture in Bath, which you will see everywhere, but the best place really is to go up to the Royal Crescent, which are 30 like terraced houses, very expensive terraced houses.
From the early 1700s,
Yes, and actually number one Royal Crescent is still kept as it was in the Georgian times. So it's a museum, so you can actually go and have a look around there as well. So I think I would really recommend doing both so that you get the kind of Roman feel for the city, but also you see the Georgian aspect of it. When you walk up to the Royal Crescent, you'll go through the circus, which is not a circus.
Right. Any more than Piccadilly Circus is a circus.
Exactly, right. Exactly. But it is not a circus. But again, that's Georgian houses that are in a circle. So perfect for photos. It's gorgeous, and you can stand in the middle. There's lots of big trees in there, and just get a bit of shade in the summer and just admire the architecture because it is beautiful. And it's all built out of Bath stone, which is a local stone, which is a creamy color. So it's very pretty. It's a very pretty city. And then actually one thing that I did this year for the first time was actually got the Jane Austen Centre, which I found absolutely fascinating. It was really good. We had an actor who talked us through Jane Austen's history and her story. He was very good. He was actually very funny as well. And then we had access to the Jane Austen Museum. You could dress up if you wanted to in Georgian clothes, which was really, it was a lot of fun. And I know that my mum really enjoyed that. That was one of the highlights for her. I think it was just very interesting. The history of that time was interesting to find out what it was like in Bath when Jane lived there. Those are the things that I would do in Bath. That's going to take you an entire day. So if you arrive late morning, maybe fit one or two of those in. If it's a summer, you could probably do all of those at a push because the days are longer. So it's going to be light until kind of 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So you could obviously walk up to the Royal Crescent and through the circus. You could see all of that later on in the day. But what I did have on the itinerary for day five, so obviously day four, you've arrived in Bath, you've had you immersed yourself in the city, had a walk around. It's a very walkable city. The next day you could, if you wanted to, actually take a day trip from Bath. So you could base yourself there for that day five and go If you really want to go down to somewhere like Stonehenge, because that comes up a lot, you can take the train from Bath down to Salisbury.
Okay.
So that takes just about an hour by train. And there from Salisbury train station, obviously you can go and have a look at the cathedral in Salisbury, very famous. There's copies of the Magna Carta there.
Oh, or you can not remember that. Okay.
Ah, yes. And it's also the tallest steeple in any cathedral in England, I think.
Okay.
But definitely worth going to have a look if you have time. Otherwise, if Stonehenge is your main target that you want to go and see, then there is actually a bus that you can jump on outside of Salisbury train station, which will take you out to Stonehenge. And we've done that a few times as well. That museum's excellent as well, I have to say. And I do recommend people do go to Stonehenge. Quite often I had people say, oh, why would I bother? I can see it from the road. And I'm like, you do realise that these are people like us thousands of years ago who moved these stones for hundreds of miles and stood them up. Do you not want to go and experience that, feel that? So I do recommend going to Stonehenge. And then, of course, you could pop back, get the bus back to Salisbury train station, and then pop back up to Bath, so in an hour. So that's an easy day trip.
And our itinerary here is going to intersect with a number of different other shows that we have done. If you want more information on Bath, we did a show on that 2 years ago on just Bath. And then for Salisbury, we have another show on Wiltshire is the one to look for that covers that area in more detail.
Oh, perfect.
Excellent. Where to next?
I was going to say, I'm going to give another option, actually, on day five. Because I'm aware, obviously, if you're doing this itinerary, you may have different interests. So another option would be to go to the Cotswolds, because you're in the southern part of the Cotswolds. There's a bit of discussion about whether Bath is in the Cotswolds or not. I'm not going to get into that. But actually, you can reach the southern part of the Cotswolds from Bath. So you may need to do a tour, for that would be the only thing I would say. You can go to somewhere like Bradford-on-Avon by train, which is only about 8 to 10 minutes away from Bath, which is a very pretty little village, I think a village town. You could go to Castlecombe. I think it was voted as the most beautiful village in England.
Okay.
The only thing I will say...
saying something, actually.
Yes. And you know what the Cotswolds are like? Absolutely.
Yep.
Just stunning. The only thing I would suggest if you are going to do that, you may need to look at a tour for that bit rather than... There's no train that's going to get you to the Cotswolds.
Yeah. Not similarly, if you want to do Stonehenge, but you also wanted to do Avebury, the old stone circle at Avebury, you're probably going to need to do a tour. I don't think Avebury is as easy to access via public transportation or train.
No, it isn't. Actually, we did Avebury last year because we had a car. Again, if you want to do Avebury, and again, I'd recommend Avebury. Avebury's fascinating. You would need probably a tour that would incorporate Avebury and Stonehenge. Yeah. And then you could
easy
do that.
Easy to find, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. No problem. And then you've got villages like Laycock, which is really interesting. It's owned by the National Trust, which quite a few different TV programs and movies, like Downton Abbey and Harry Potter, being filmed there. Laycock Abbey in particular is pretty famous. But the village, it's actually a private village. You pay for entry, you park in a car park outside.
Okay.
Unless you've got National Trust membership, which we do, and then it's free parking and free entry. So that's worth going to. But again, you'd have to plan that into that day five part of your itinerary. But again, you could spend the entire day in Bath. It really wouldn't matter. I'm just going to mention about Bath, though, that if you're in Bath, and it's something that we always do, is I would recommend going to eat at Sally Lunn's bakery. Sally Lunn was a refugee and arrived in Bath in sort of the 1600s. And she baked what is called a Sally Lunn's bun, which is a brioche type bun. So you can go there and you can either have a savoury or a sweet brioche bun. So I've had, my favourite is the lemon curd, so I'd recommend that, lemon curd brioche bun. They're quite large. And I've also had savoury. I've been there at night for dinner and had savoury. What is really interesting there is there's a museum as well underneath where you can go down, and if you've been to the bakery, into the actual cafe and had a drink or something, you can actually go down to the museum for free. And there you can see the medieval oven that was used, so it's really interesting. Also, you can see where actual the street level was then, because obviously it's gone higher and higher over the years, so it's worth doing. So that wraps up Bath. That's day five and day six. So day four and five in Bath, day six is to take the train to Cardiff. So we're going to a different country. So we're now going to Wales. So I'm going to say this itinerary incorporates three capital cities. So we've got London, Cardiff and Edinburgh, and three countries. So England, Wales and Scotland. I was really keen to include all three countries and all three capitals, because I know a lot of interest in visiting. So day six, head to Cardiff. It takes about an hour and 33 minutes from Bath Spa to Cardiff. Lots of things to do and see in Cardiff when you arrive. Again, I've literally just given that day to Cardiff because if you leave Bath in the morning, check out your hotel, get the train, you're going to be there by lunchtime. So you've got Cardiff Castle you can visit, which is actually in the centre of Cardiff itself. The arcades, which I personally love, which were our Victorian Edwardian indoor shopping arcades, but they are beautiful, really beautiful. So definitely worth having a look. There are three: High Street Arcade, Duke Street Arcade, and the Castle Arcade. If it's raining, because it's the UK, mm-hmm. It may be raining.
That happens occasionally.
It does happen now and again. It is worth going there. There's also the redeveloped waterfront area of Cardiff Bay, where there's lots of restaurants and bars around there. You can take a boat trip around Cardiff Bay. And another kind of thing you could do in Cardiff, and I know lots of people are big fans of British TV, is that if you're a Doctor Who fan or...
That's what I was just Googling, yeah. Yes. If I'm in Cardiff, I'm doing a Doctor Who tour.
There you go. Doctor Who tour, or if you like Gavin and Stacey, I'm a huge fan of Gavin and Stacey. There you go. So you've got some theme tours that you can do as well.
Okay.
Also, Cardiff is obviously really famous in terms of sports venue because you've got the Principality Stadium, and also a lot of music events are held in Cardiff. If you've got an interest in going to a particular music concert, I guess you could coincide this itinerary with your concert or your sports event. You're just going to get a little taste. Obviously, it's only going to be that day six, because day seven, we're moving on again. So on day seven, you have a choice, because I did want to include some time in a bit more countryside. So obviously, this is quite city heavy, this itinerary.
Okay.
So day seven, you have a choice between either heading to Liverpool or going to the Lake District.
Oh, tough choice. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I guess you could do both if you've got more than 14 days. And I know we've got lots of people who've emailed and said they've adapted the itinerary, stretched it out a bit more. Yeah, I know this is a dilemma and it would be really difficult. But if you're a Beatles fan, I guess it's pretty straightforward. You're going to go to Liverpool, aren't you?
I've done Liverpool from London by train, yep, with two Beatles fans in my family. And it was stunning. It was wonderful.
Oh, I love Liverpool. Personally, I adore Liverpool. Love Liverpool. I really do. I enjoy the Beatles, but I wouldn't say that I'm a massive fan. I'm not. I obviously love the music, but I don't listen to it all day, every day. But going to Liverpool and doing the Beatles tour, absolutely worth it. Fantastic. Going to the Cavern Club. We actually went over to the UK a couple of years ago to a wedding, and our friends were getting married in Liverpool, and their reception that evening was in the Cavern Club, which was amazing. Fabulous. So if you're a Beatles fan, yes, definitely do the Beatles tour.
Or if you're willing to become a Beatles fan, because I like Beatles music. I wouldn't have said I was a Beatles fan. So the Magic Mystery Tour is the one that is done by the tourism office there. And it is excellent. It is exceedingly excellent. The guides are wonderful. You're not just seeing the places, but they're playing you not just the songs you know. You're learning about the ska band that John was in, and they're playing you ska music and things like that. So you learn more about where things came from too, and a wonderful tour.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite tours, actually, the Magical Mystery Tour. It's really good, and it's so much fun. Like I said, they play the music, everybody gets into the mood.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun, and you learn so much about, you see where they were brought up, but also you got a strawberry field. You see a lot of it makes sense. You go, oh, okay, yeah, now I see where they got the inspiration for that song from.
But on the other hand, I haven't been to the Lake District, and I really would like to get to the Lake District. So that's why I say it's a tough choice. ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. you can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Day 7, you travel to whichever of those destinations. So I will just say, if you're going to Liverpool, that will take you about 3.5 hours from Cardiff. You can go to the Albert Dock, which is a fabulous area to explore in Liverpool. You've got museums there. There's a Beatles Museum there as well. You've got the Maritime Museum. There's an International Slavery Museum. There's a Tate Modern at Albert Dock. Lots of nice restaurants and places to eat. So it's worth having a walk around Albert Dock. Obviously, if you're a football fan, which my husband is, he would be going to Liverpool to go to a match at Anfield, that's for sure.
Got it.
So that would be Liverpool. So you've got day 7, you arrive there, and then day 8, you've got the entire day to do that tour and explore and get to know a bit of Liverpool. Okay. If you decide to head to the Lake District, alternatively, on day 7, that's a slightly longer train journey. That's going to take you around 6 hours. But you will get into Windermere Station, so that's a train station in the Lake District.
If it's 6 hours, are we heading back to London to get up there or what?
No, we're not. We'll go via Oxenholm. So you'll change, I think, at Crewe and then again at Oxenholm to get to Windermere, which will take it into the Lake District itself. There's been a big move in the last few years. And this is another thing I'm talking about, traveling by train. There's been a big move in the Lake District recently to try and not prevent, but just try and encourage people to use public transport rather than going in with cars, because it just gets crowded and it's really difficult to park in the Lake District. Even off season, we've struggled to park before. And really, the public transport system in the Lake District is fantastic. Absolutely, really fantastic. Okay. You can easily get into Windermere. We stayed in a B&B very close to the train station. Actually, when you walk out the train station at Windermere, you'll see all the buses. They're there. So you can just jump on a bus by a day or a week or a 2 day or whatever, however long you're there, pass, which will take you all around that area of the Lake District that you're in. So around Windermere, you can jump on the bus and go down to Bowness and then take a boat trip, which I highly recommend that people do. And I want to hear all about it when you do this, Chris. It's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So I do the whole boat trip, go to Ambleside, go to Lakeside, and then go back to Bowness. And then you can jump on another local bus. So go to Grasmere, where Wordsworth Dove Cottage is in Grasmere. There's also the gingerbread shop that you can buy gingerbread in Grasmere. So there's lots to do. If you're a hiker, which I am not, let me categorically say at this point, I do not hike at all, but I know I'm sure plenty of people that if listening to this will be interested in walks. Obviously, Lake District is a perfect destination if you enjoy hiking as well. But I don't hike, and there's still plenty of things for me to do. On our last trip, we did a tour to Hilltop, Beatrix Potter's home, which was fabulous, really interesting to see. We've all grown up reading Beatrix Potter books. To actually see where the inspiration came from for her books and be able to go, oh, yeah, I get that now. I totally understand it and get into the world of Beatrix Potter. Yeah, fascinating. The Lake District is a beautiful area of the UK, absolutely stunning area. So if you want a break from all these cities, then definitely go to the Lake District.
Okay.
Very easy to get around by public transport, so you have no worries there whatsoever. So then day 9 is Edinburgh. So we're going to head again to another country, another capital. Okay. So we're going to go to Edinburgh, which is the capital of Scotland, and probably, I would say, the second most talked about city when we're talking to people via email or in our Facebook group about visiting the UK. Edinburgh comes up all the time. So
I can believe that.
So I could not have an itinerary that did not include Edinburgh. You arrive into Edinburgh Waverley Station, which again is in the centre of Edinburgh. So very easy. You get off the train. We stay in the same accommodation, which is a 5-minute walk from Edinburgh train station. We've stayed there for years. That's where we go every time, so you don't have to worry. Yeah, so in Edinburgh, I've basically given day 9 is the day to travel to Edinburgh. So that's going to take you 3 to 4 hours, depending if you're coming from Liverpool or coming from the Lake District. Okay. So it's going to take a good chunk of the day to get up to Edinburgh, which is why actually the Edinburgh part of the itinerary is actually day 9, 10 and 11, because I've given day 9 to travel, get yourself to Edinburgh, get yourself into your accommodation, and just again, orientate yourself with the city. So in Edinburgh, you've got the old city and the new city. So old city is the medieval part of the city, which is where you'll find the Royal Mile, which starts at the top of the hill at Edinburgh Castle and ends at the bottom of the hill, which is at Holyrood House. And then you've got the Georgian part of the city, which is the new town. There's so much to do in Edinburgh again, and I'm sure you have got plenty of podcasts talking about Edinburgh, Chris.
So far we've got podcasts talking about every place you've talked about. I wasn't getting into that, but we've got 2 on Wales, we've got 1 on Liverpool, we've got 1 on the Lake District, and we have at least 2 or 3 on Edinburgh and Scotland.
That's amazing. I feel like I'm tying it all together.
Exactly.
In this itinerary. Oh, Edinburgh, where do I start? So much to do and see in Edinburgh. It's a fabulous city. It's one of my favourite places to visit, and I can happily immerse myself in Edinburgh for weeks, actually. I'm from Northumberland, which is the county which kind of borders, it's the northern part of England. Visiting Edinburgh as a child is something we did a lot, so it's a city that I just have a huge connection with. And I know when I talk to people who visited how much everybody falls under Edinburgh's spell. So what should you do in Edinburgh? Edinburgh Castle, absolutely, 100%. Do a tour. I highly recommend. Now, I know some people say, oh, I don't want to do tours, I want to do this myself. But I found that you just learn so much more if you've got a guide who knows about the history and can tell you the stories, because really that's what you're after, aren't you? We don't all want to just know dry facts. We want to know the stories about a destination. And they can tell you the stories around the important things in Edinburgh and about the people who lived in Edinburgh. If you go on to the Royal Mile, you've got all these closes off the Royal Mile with some very interesting names. And I did a historic tour of the Royal Mile a few years ago, which ended at the castle, went into the castle. And it was just fascinating to find out about what it was like to live in Edinburgh, because at that point, everybody was crammed into that top of the hill part of the old town, and there was walls that surrounded the area, because it was easy to defend because you've got the castle. And there's actually a pub, I think it's called World's End, because for people that was end of the world when they went actually out of the gate from the town. So it was just really fascinating. So you've got on the Royal Mile, you've got St. Giles Cathedral to go and visit. Walk down it, do the tour, find out about the history. Go down some of the closes and have a look and think about what it was like.
And by closes, we mean alleyways.
Alleyways, yeah. Go down, just get a kind of feel for what it was like to have lived there. And there's some very interesting things to see and discover as you walk along the Royal Mile. Start at the castle, walk your way down. Look up as well. Don't just look down, look up. There's fascinating things to see on the top of buildings. And yeah, it's just, again, a lovely city to visit. Get yourself down to Holyrood House at the actual bottom of the hill. Go and explore that. One of my favourite things in Holyrood House that I saw was actually a dress that Queen Victoria wore. And I was amazed at how tiny she was.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we all know she was tiny. We all know that. We've maybe seen the odd video. I've seen a video that was taken in 18-something, obviously 18-something, with maybe early 1900s with Queen Victoria, a black and white old kind of cinereal type thing. And you can see how tiny she was. But to see this dress, it put into perspective, it was so tiny. So have a look around, go around Holyrood House, which is obviously the residence, the royal residence, when the king, previously the queen, would come up to Edinburgh. Yeah, explore that. Take all that in. just feel the history of it, learn about it. And then if you want, after that, if you want a bit of exercise, you've got a couple of options. You could walk up Arthur's Seat. Now, I'm going to take my hands up here and say that I have not done that because I don't hike, as I've already mentioned. But my husband did it last year. We arrived actually on a Sunday. Again, it was in the summer, so light nights. So he walked up to the top of Arthur's Seat, which gives you fantastic views over Edinburgh. So you need to wear sensible shoes and be really take water with you, and because it is quite a hike up there. For me, rather than do that, I went up Calton Hill. So Calton Hill will also give you similar excellent views without the strenuous need to walk quite a substantial way up a hill, which is Arthur's Seat. So I should say Arthur's Seat, I think, is an extinct volcanic plug. It's something to do, because obviously that whole area, because Edinburgh Castle is built on what was an extinct volcano, which people find fascinating when you think about the UK. You don't really think volcanoes, do you? But anyway, so yeah, so Calton Hill will give you some excellent views. You get some great views towards Leith as well from there, which is the port where the Royal Yacht Britannia is moored there. And then you get some fantastic views towards Edinburgh Castle. Another place I'd mention if you're going to be in Edinburgh is go to Greyfriars Kirkyard. It's very famous. I think a lot of connections with Harry Potter, but it's just a fascinating churchyard to walk around. Outside that, you'll find the statue of Greyfriars Bobby, who was a dog who was very loyal to his master. And when his master died, he actually spent his time just sitting on the grave. And so the local people adopted him and they fed him and looked after him. And then when he passed away, he was actually buried in the cemetery as well with his master. So you have and you get, again, beautiful views of Edinburgh Castle from there. But it's a lovely place to go. And yeah, just feel the ancientness of Edinburgh, I think. Okay. I think that's what I always feel. Another thing that my husband did last time I didn't do because I get claustrophobic is he went down the vaults, because there's a kind of underground part of Edinburgh is quite famous, so you can go down to the underground vaults.
I actually don't think we've talked about on the show before.
Oh, okay. Maybe you can come on and have a chat
or
about
possibly
that.
I'm just forgetting because we've been doing this for 18 years.
Yes, I'm sure somebody would have mentioned the vault. So if you're interested in that, you can go and have a look at the underground. And actually, people used to live there, again, because it was very crowded and dirty. You've got to think about how dirty and disease and not the greatest place to live in the medieval time. It was crowded. Okay. Everybody was on top of each other and be crammed into this very small space. So yeah, that's Edinburgh. So obviously day 9 you arrive. Day 10 you can spend the entire day exploring Edinburgh. And day 11 you could spend the entire day visiting Edinburgh. But what you could also do if you wanted to is you could take a day trip from Edinburgh by train. So we have an article all about that, because different options, because there's lots of places that are close by. So you could go to Glasgow, only takes about 30 minutes by train to Glasgow. You could go to see the Kelpies. Now, have you seen the Kelpies before, Chris?
I haven't been to Scotland, so.
Wow. You need to remedy that.
One of the most obvious holes in my travel itinerary so far.
Oh, absolutely. The Kelpies are large horse head-shaped statues, but they're huge. I think they're about 30 metres. I should know off the top of my head, but I think they're about 30 metres tall. So they're beautiful. There's two of them, and they're worth going to see. You can easily get to the Kelpies, again, by train. Another option is to go to St. Andrews. So if you're a golf, St. Andrews is very easy to go to. You can get the train from Edinburgh to Lucas. And then from Lucas, outside the train station, there is a bus which will take you. And it takes about 10-11 minutes, will get you into St. Andrews. So lots to see and do in St. Andrews. You can have a look around. Again, we did a tour actually just because we hadn't been before. So just wanted to get orientated with it. Next time probably wouldn't, because we've got a lot of the history. But yes, and you get to walk on the golf course in St. Andrew. If you're a big fan, I know that's something that everybody wants to do, and stand on the bridge, whose name's completely gone out my head now, but there's the bridge you can stand on, which we had to obviously have that iconic photo of the bridge and then the main green, the first, I'm not a golfer, excuse me, but
it's okay.
The green, the first bit of the tee off, that's the right word, you can stand, and then you get the kind of the clubhouse in the background. So you can do that. Easy day trip from Edinburgh. We did that. So again, you've not only with this itinerary are you incorporating those five cities and one kind of park, you have the option to add on all these extras. Now, what I also will say at this point, if you have more than the 14 days, I have got a Best of Scotland by Rail itinerary, which can add on to this as well. So if you decide that's what you want to do, the only bit that's difficult is Skye, because there's no trains on Skye. But we have kind of worked that bit out in the itinerary, but the rest of it you can do by train, which we have done and highly recommend. Again, if you don't want to drive, fantastic way to get around. Trains are excellent. And you can go on the Jacobite, which everybody wants to do. So that'll be one that I'm sure will be on your list.
You can go on the job. We're talking about a train.
We're talking about
a steam train here, I'm guessing.
We're talking about a steam train, and it goes from Fort William to Mullaig. Yeah. Again, a very popular because it's very famous from Harry Potter, but it goes over the Glenfinnan Viaduct. And
I figured that's one we're talking about, yes.
Yeah, one of the most popular train journeys in Scotland and probably in the whole of...
Fort William has gotten its own share of press recently as part of a entirely different series.
Oh, I know what you mean. Oh, Outlander. You talk about Outlander?
As part of the Outlander series, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, Outlander. Obviously, you've got Skye. The music at the beginning of the Outlander series is that Over the Sea to Skye. It's slightly easier to get to and from Skye these days is because there's actually from the Calla Lo Coch, there's a bridge over to Skye now, so you don't always have to take a boat. But yeah, so you have an option to add on that if you wanted to, that additional kind of best of Scotland by rail itinerary kind of fits in at this point. So far, you've done your London, you've been to Bath, you've done Cardiff, you've gone to Liverpool and potentially the Lake District, whichever of those two. You've now spent your time exploring and dipping your toes into what Scotland has to offer. Mm-hmm. So now we're heading back into England.
Okay.
Day 12, travel day, is we jump on the train at Edinburgh and we head down to York.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is a very special train journey because this train journey will travel through Northumberland, which is my home county, which is where I was born. And so,
and is there a billboard to that effect as we get to the...
It says Tracy was born here, absolutely.
Great.
I don't like this term, but I'm going to say it is a bit of a hidden gem, Northumberland, but it is stunning. Now, I know you're only going to be going through it on the train, but I suggest that you sit on the left-hand side on the train and the direction of travel. And then when you cross over the road, you're going to get beautiful views of the Northumberland coastline. Just worth doing that. You'll go through to Newcastle. So you'll get Northumberland coastline, then you go to Newcastle. Then you've got Durham. Oh, and actually after Newcastle, at Gateshead, you'll see the Angel of the North, which is a massive Anthony Gormley statue. I think that would also be on the left-hand side of the train as you go down. Whenever I go home, it welcomes me back. That's how I was... It's huge, massive angel on top of a hill. So you can't miss that. So you'll go through past Durham as well. So you hopefully get to see Durham Cathedral and Castle. And then you'll arrive into York. So that takes about 2.5 hours from Edinburgh into York. Again, York train station, it's literally just outside York city walls. So 5-minute walk into the actual city of York itself. So what can I say about York? Again, fabulous city to visit and really should be on everybody's itinerary. And we talk quite often to people who are planning to visit, going to London, and then they want to go to Edinburgh, and we talk a lot about that train trip, and we're like, please stop off in York, please hop off the train, there is somewhere you can store your luggage, go and have a look around York, because it's fabulous city. Again, Roman connections, Viking connections,
right,
huge amount of history, so lots and lots to see and do in York. When you arrive, you've got the afternoon in York, and then you've got the entire day on day 13 in York. There are lots of day trips you can take from York as well, but really, York deserves, I would say, a day and a half. York Minster is obviously the place I'm going to start with. Very famous. There is a charge to go to York Minster unless you actually live in York itself. So do book a ticket for York Minster. Beautiful Minster. Again, you can climb up to the top of the bell tower and have views over York, which again, I have not done, but my husband and his friend did last year. I stayed in the Minster and took lots of lovely photographs. You can walk the walls of York. So they're 13th century walls and they are complete, surround the entire city. They're actually the most complete city walls in England. And I would recommend, there's lots of places where you can get the steps up and just walk around the walls. So you get fantastic views of York. Oh, one little tip I will give just you, Chris, don't tell anybody else. So York Minster, if you want a view of York Minster, a great place to go is if you go to the Marks and Spencer's coffee shop,
Okay.
You get a fabulous view of York Minster, but don't tell everybody. So Roman, so you can go to, there's remains of a Roman bath in York itself, which are underneath a pub. Would you believe it?
Okay.
So I'd go and have a look there. So you get that Roman connection again. For the Vikings, you can go to the York Viking Centre, mm-hmm. which is an interactive experience. Really interesting, really good to get, because the Vikings invaded through Northumberland, York. So there's right. a lot of Viking history. I'm sure I've got Viking blood. So you can go and learn about the Vikings' impact on York at the centre. Then you can go to the, it's like a walk through history. This, you've got your Romans, then you've got your Vikings. Then you can go to the Shambles, which is a medieval street, cobbled street. So make sure okay. you've got sensible shoes on when you're walking around York. So some of the buildings there are 14th century, yeah. timber framed. So gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. It is very touristy these days, I will say that. So try and go there early in the morning or later on in the day, because it's very busy. So if you're trying to get that kind of shot without anybody in it, you're not going to have much chance if you go in the middle of the day. It just gets very busy. A lot of it is turned over to the Harry Potter kind of theme. But you've got to still remember that this is an authentic medieval street. So you will get that experience. So if you look past the shops and just imagine what it was like living in the medieval times, where people will be, the buildings are, the top floors overhang. So you can just imagine them throwing all the stuff out onto the street, into the gutters, and the smells and the noises. And you can sense it there. So it's another lovely place where you can feel the past, I think. There's other things to do in York. Eat some Yorkshire puddings.
Okay.
So my favourite is the Yorkshire pudding wrap, which is basically having a Sunday dinner wrapped in a large Yorkshire pudding, and you eat that with...
And when we say Yorkshire pudding, see, that is not something we tend to eat here, but a Yorkshire pudding is more similar to a popover. Oh. It's not really a pudding, is the thing that always strikes me as odd with...
Yeah, and we often get asked about why is it called a pudding. Yes, because it's not a pudding. It's actually something you'd have savoury. It's made from batter, and it rises into, I don't know how to describe it really, but it's because I'm so used to, I've eaten Yorkshire pudding my entire life. So you have it on your Sunday dinner. It goes traditionally with roast beef. Most people will have it on a Sunday, and you can mm-hmm. actually put sausages in it and have toad in the hole. So there's lots of different uses of Yorkshire pudding, but yes, it is savoury. So if you have a Yorkshire pudding wrap, they basically put your roast potatoes and your veg and your gravy inside this large Yorkshire pudding. It's like a bowl shape, I suppose, and then fold it up. So it's a bit messy, but it's really good fun. That's definitely something that you should have. Another place we enjoy going is Betty's Tea Rooms, very famous in York. So definitely go to Betty's Tea Rooms for an afternoon tea. You will have to line up. There's always a line. I think you can book afternoon tea, because for my, I think it was 50th birthday, my husband surprised me with all my family in York. We went by train and all my family were there. We had a lovely afternoon tea, which you can book. But if you go for tea and cake, you have to queue up. And it does, it's incredibly popular. So do that. Another thing that my husband would not forgive me if I did not mention in York is the Railway Museum. It's free. Okay. Fantastic. I have been around the York Railway Museum more times than I can care to count. But it's fascinating. And there you can actually see Queen Victoria's rail carriages. And his son's Edward's. I can't remember which Edward he was. But anyway, Edward V. you can see his rail carriages there as well. Plus you can see the bullet train. You can see lots of trains from around the world. You can see the rocket. George Stevenson's rocket is there. So if you have an interest in trains, absolutely give yourself a few hours to explore that museum. Very popular. You can actually jump on from the museum. There's a little train that'll take you back into the city itself, because it's outside the walls. So I don't know, it's only just a couple of pounds and that'll take you. You can go all the way up to the Minster if you don't want to walk it.
Okay.
So it's free, so absolutely perfect thing to do. And then if you really wanted to do a day trip out, you could go to the Yorkshire Moors, you could go to the Yorkshire Dales. I know All Creatures Great and Small is incredibly popular. The remake of the series, I personally love it. So I know there's been a lot of interest, because I've had a lot of chats with people about exploring the Dales and the interest in that mm-hmm. story of James Herriot and All Creatures Great and Small. So you could do that, but because I've only given really a day and a half in the itinerary, you're probably best off just spending it in York and exploring York. And if you've got extra days, add those in and do a bit of Yorkshire. So day 14, I can't believe we're at the end of the itinerary. day 14, you hop back on the train back to London. So it'll take you about 2 hours from York train station back to King's Cross. And then that's it. You arrive back in London. So if that's a day that you are flying back to the US or wherever you're from, I would suggest you fly later on in the day and take the train late. Yeah, don't take the train in the morning and then get to Heathrow. Give yourself plenty of time. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
But if you had to, you could do that day 14, get the train from York down to King's Cross and then get yourself back over to Heathrow and fly out. So it is absolutely doable. So yeah, that's it. That's my 14-day Best of Great Britain by Rail itinerary, Chris.
Let's talk about a little bit the logistics. So if I'm booking train travel from where I sit here on the internet, for instance, and I wanted to book all these tickets, do I need to book them all ahead of time, first of all?
There's a few options that you've got with this, really, is that if you're going to do this itinerary, what might work is to look at something like a Brit Rail Pass.
Okay, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, because that would give you options that you can get a flexible or consecutive pass, depending on how many days you want to jump on and off trains.
So a flexible pass lets me ride the train one day, take 2 days off riding the train, and then ride it the next day, and counts that as 2 days, where a consecutive pass, it's the total number of days. Okay, got it. All right.
Yeah. So you could do that. And to be honest, it's not cheap, but then the train travel in the UK is not necessarily that cheap either. So it's worth working out if that's cost effective for you to do that. And that, to be honest, for the flexibility it gives, I think it's a pretty good option. So you've got the Brit Rail Pass, or you could go for a Global Eurail Pass, which is a similar thing. We have an article which compares both, because really depending on the number of days that you're going to be either consecutive or you want that flexibility, you've got to see which one would work best for you. But basically it's the same thing in that it gives you the ability to hop on and off trains that day or for days. Trains don't get full. We quite often get asked, why can't I buy a ticket? Or is it booked out? And it's trains don't get full. That doesn't happen. What we would suggest that you do is that you book for seats. So you can get a first or second class pass, depending on your budget. So you can go to a train station, any manned train station at present in the UK. That may change in future if they're no longer going to be manned booking offices, but that's a bit controversial, so I'm not going to go into that. But at the moment, as we talk now, you can take a list of the different trains that you wish to catch. So look on nationalrailinquiries.com and you can take that list and give that to the booking office and they will reserve for free your seat reservations. So it won't cost you anything. So that's the best way. I think with a Brit Rail Pass, you get one free reservation, and past that, you have to pay. So we suggest just wait until you get into the UK and then just go to a manned ticket office and say, these are the days that I want to do the trains. But don't panic if you don't get that train, if you've got a pass and you get another train, because chances are you're going to find a seat. Especially go first class, you should do.
I wanted to book this one at a time, despite the fact that the trains don't connect in London, it's all the trains, same train system now, unlike some countries.
So I
go to BritRail.
It won't matter because you just book it through. There's different, it starts getting complex, and Doug's far better to answer questions about how it all works in terms of train companies than I am. But you can just go onto one site and you can book all of your tickets if you wanted to. So I think it's around about 12 weeks before you can book tickets. Now, there are a variety of different tickets. And again, I don't want to go into this, Chris, because it's so complicated. But there's like anytime tickets. So there's different tickets which you can buy. And obviously, the further out you buy them, the cheaper it's going to be. But an anytime ticket would give you flexibility on that day, because as an anytime ticket says, you can jump on any train, I think after 9:30 in the morning. So obviously you're missing the rush hour. So you can do that. It would be more complicated, I think, if you start looking down that route. There are things like you can buy like train passes. So if there's two of you traveling, you can get two together train pass, which costs around about £30, and then you have to be obviously traveling together. So you could look at that. It is really complex, the whole ticketing system in the UK. So really you're better off when it comes to, when you've planned it, is having a look and go, what would work best for you? So probably BritRail and Global Train. I know that's what most people who've done this itinerary have used and found that just for peace of mind, it's just easier. So to do that.
And then the other question, first class, second class, I'm assuming first class comes with a butler because this is England.
Wouldn't that be lovely? First class gives you more space, free Wi-Fi. You usually get free Wi-Fi in second class these days, but standard class, I shouldn't actually call it second class. I can hear Doug saying to me it's not second class, standard class. So first class is standard class. So in first class, you will often get meals, snacks. But again, that might depend on the day of the week, because sometimes if it's at weekend, that won't necessarily be the case. So we would always recommend that you take something to drink and something to eat or a snack, just in case. It doesn't matter if you're in first or standard class. We'd always recommend that you take something anyway, just in case, because you don't want just have something to drink with you for sure, just in case there isn't somebody on doing the tea and coffees that day. Quite often, if you're in standard class, there will be a trolley that will come down and you can buy drinks and snacks from the trolley. But again, if it's
every flavored beans from the trolley, we're familiar with that.
Oh, yes. What sort of beans?
No, we're talking about Harry Potter, coming down.
I've just realized, yes, Bertie Bott's every flavor beans.
Exactly.
I have to tell you, when we did the Jacobite train going back to Scotland, we bought some to try on the train, because you just have to be on the Jacobite on that train going over the Glenfinnan Viaduct, eating some beans that taste of soil as they whatever flavor, grass. Yeah.
Funny. Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, any last minute words of advice that people need to know before they do this itinerary?
I think just have some flexibility with what you don't want to do. If you are planning to visit in the high season in the UK, so you've got to think about when it's school holidays as well. So if you're looking at kind of the Christmas period, if you're looking at Easter, then if you're looking at the summer holidays, now the summer holidays in England are end of July, all of August, and in Scotland are mid-June to the end of July, from what I remember, or mid-August. They're slightly different. Is you need to just consider that you might need to book some of these things ahead. And I know people have recently said to me, oh, they arrived in Edinburgh and hadn't bought tickets for Edinburgh Castle, and then were disappointed that they didn't. The other thing that I would recommend is look at accommodation that's close to a train station as well, and pack lightly. You don't want to be trailing around for 2 weeks with a 30 kg bag. Really, you don't. There is storage on the trains, but you don't want to be stuck if that's full. Doug will always say, my husband always says, have something ideally that you can lift above your head and put in the overhead rail if needed, or at the end of the carriage, and then a small bag. So again,
lightly. In general, I don't hear people come home from trips and saying, I wish I'd packed more. And I hear a lot of people saying, I wish I'd packed less. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And also, I think, make sure that you just pack for the British weather. So just think about layers and good shoes and that sort of stuff. But so I think the main tip that I would say if you're doing this is, this itinerary works really well. Think about your accommodation near the train station. Make sure you don't pack too much, and book those particular things that you want to do. So whether it's a tour or a ticket, make sure that you book those in advance. You book the Roman baths, for example.
Our usual question at this point is, you're standing in wherever our destination is, where are you standing? What are you looking at if you're standing in the prettiest spot? If we're on a train on your itinerary and we're in the prettiest spot, which train is it and what's the view?
I am 100% going to say it's the train from Edinburgh down to York, and you're looking at the Northumberland coastline.
Thought you might. And one thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Great Britain.
That's going to be a funny thing to say, but it makes me smile because, one thing that makes me smile, it doesn't make me laugh, but makes me smile when I go back, is the different accents. Mm-hmm. Because obviously I'm living in Australia at the moment, so I'm very used to an Aussie accent. So I go back to the UK and it's just the sheer different accents of wherever you go in the country, it changes. You don't have to go very far.
Yeah, it's not a big country, but there are a great variety of accents.
Absolutely. And you know what? Sometimes it's being able to understand, even as somebody who's British, being able to understand sometimes a very strong accent. Another thing I will say, I've just thought another thing that actually makes me laugh is sometimes actually trying to pronounce some of the names in the UK. Because some of the pronunciations that I get are quite interesting, but even I struggle. It's really funny because people assume that as a Brit I know exactly how to pronounce all of the different place names, and you know what, I can also get it wrong. So never ever think, oh, I don't want to have a go at pronouncing it in case it's wrong, because honestly even Brits can get it wrong. So there you go.
And you're not even talking about Wales at this point.
I wouldn't even,
which is a whole nother level of complicated. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. And if we had to summarize this itinerary in just three words, what three words would you use?
Best of Britain.
There we go. Excellent. Our guest again is Tracy Collins, and we named a few of Tracy's websites. We've got UK Travel Planning, Tracy's Travel in Time, her original site, LondonTravelPlanning.com. And then you've got one podcast that's in current production, and that's UK Travel Planning with a new one coming. What's the new one coming?
The new one is Global Travel Planning. Basically, because I wanted to, we're going to do a lot of travel that doesn't just involve the UK.
Right.
And I also wanted to talk to people and experts from around the world about the different places that they live or have traveled to, mm-hmm. and to share some tips. So that will merge with tracystravelsintime.com. That my first website over time will become Global Travel Planning, because it's a website that includes information about all the places that I've lived and traveled to.
Excellent. And we usually ask people that if we went to one of your websites and the best example of the content about this, but you've got this itinerary in blog form. And so we'll link to the blog post that will have all of the information that we talked about here on the show, or at least the itinerary laid out for you.
So. Oh, yeah. And that itinerary as well, that blog post has got maps that I actually made, designed myself, which has got each of the different parts of the itinerary on a map. So you can see. So I've got an overall map, mm-hmm. which shows you where you're going to travel. And then I've got individual for each day, the different chunks of the journey as well on map.
Got it. And connections and things like that I need to know.
Yeah, excellent. Everything's there. Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Tracy, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler. So glad to finally do this. And thanks for sharing with us your wisdom of the United Kingdom, well, specifically, I guess, in this case, Great Britain.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It's been so lovely to talk to you. So I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in getting the episodes early with chapters, without ads, and getting a monthly Zoom call, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler to learn more. I heard from Dave, who had an answer to the question that I asked on the show recently in the Azerbaijan episode about chapters and how people who have an Android phone can see the photos that I put in, the chapters that show up for the first month of any episode that comes out in the main feed, or forever for those that show up on the Patreon feed. And Dave said, I heard your question about chapters and Android users on the Azerbaijan episode. Yes, I listen late. Also was a guest years ago. I use Pocket Casts for Android, also available on Apple devices. This app supports chapters and the photos. Both are great and appreciated, Chris2X. But if you want to abandon, given the issues you cited, that is a rational choice. I will not abandon the show over it. Thanks, Dave. One of these days, I may do that. I'm not quite ready to give them up just yet. There's no rational reason I should keep doing them, but I am in a habit of 18 years now, so we'll see. On the recent episode on Northern Colombia, I heard from Dina, who said, I wish your Colombia podcast came out earlier. We were there at the beginning of July. We went to Minca, but did not enjoy it that much. We had to carry our bags up a mountain, which was mostly for backpackers. The town was not much of anything. We were so hot that we didn't do much. Sorry to hear that, Dina. Unfortunately, I can't always coordinate my release schedule with people's vacations, but maybe next time. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.